It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Yes, it is. And this week was a particularly interesting chat as we spoke on the controversy that happened over the weekend about the $11.7 million worth of funding allocated to a private green school in Taranaki. The school charges between $20,000 and $40,000 a year, and it only has 50 students. This decision was not received well at all, particularly as it came out the same week that reported low decile high school students were having to choose between their studies and leaving school early to financially support their families who were struggling from COVID-19. So I began by asking James quickly about the move to level 2.5 in Auckland and what this means for campaigning before moving on to the Green School controversy.
Well, we still need to work through some of the implications because obviously this has been quite a fast moving situation, and so we're still a little cautious about things like door to door canvassing, and it does make public events possible but still, you know, slightly awkward to manage. So our campaign team still needs to kind of get into the detail of that. I mean, we have already been doing a lot more of some of the other types of campaigning that we would normally do, such as phone calling of people, which has been reasonably successful during the lockdown period because, you know, people were at home and able to take calls. We've done a lot more kind of Zoom internet-based events and so on. So we'll just have to let it play out a bit more.
So over the weekend, yourself and the Green Party have been in some hot water after it was announced that the private green school in Taranaki that charges between $20,000 and $40,000 a year and only has around 50 students was going to receive $11.7 million in funding when it's the Green Party policy, according to the former education spokesperson, to never fund private schools. Can you explain for those who may not know much about what this is or be a bit confused about what's happened from your perspective?
Sure, yeah. And I mean, it was an oversight when it comes to Green Party policy. Essentially what we had here was during the kind of the worst of the pandemic crisis, the government allocated $3 billion to a fund for infrastructure and construction projects around the country. And it's going to just, a massive range of projects, which includes a lot of public entities like fire stations and swimming pools and things like that. But it's also going to some private entities as well as sort of economic development projects. My role as an associate finance minister was to work with Shane Jones, who's the infrastructure minister, and the other budget ministers to go through all of these projects. And we put together a list of projects that we could support and sent them in. And that included, you know, things like a whole group of cycleways, some busways, a lot of waste management and waste processing plants, Heading Energy's hydrogen refueling network and so on. And it included this school in the Taranaki. This had been suggested to us by the local mayor, Neil Holden from New Plymouth, who was quite keen both for the short-term construction jobs, because they are seeing a downturn in that sector, just like everywhere else, and also he was keen for the economic development opportunity that this international school represents for Taranaki at a time when they're trying to work out what happens after oil and gas. Because the council supported it and because it was rated quite highly in terms of, its sort of rankings and its initial assessment, I supported that project alongside a whole bunch of others. And I simply missed the fact, I knew it was a school, obviously a private school, but it didn't occur to me that we had an exclusion on funding of private schools.
Was or is, because the funding hasn't been pulled, the intended effect of this money? You say construction opportunities, but is there a reason why this green school was chosen instead of a many number of underfunded state schools?
Well, it doesn't. It comes out of a separate budget from the budget that we fund the reconstruction of state schools. So we also have almost $2 billion set aside for reconstruction buildings and maintenance. So there's $1.3 billion going to major capital works in about 10% of our schools around the country, including, I think, at least one in Taranaki. And then there's also another, another $400 million, which are going to all schools around the country to top up their maintenance and their buildings and maintenance funds. So that was actually part of the system. The kind of breakdown here is that because this was a separate pool of money, it didn't go through Vote Education, and it went via the council instead.
A lot of the criticism is because this week stories also broke about students in low decile schools having to drop out to help their families stay afloat financially after COVID-19. Also, the acting principal of Marfell Community School sent a very powerful open letter to Jacinda Ardern on the funding, describing it as elitist and completely inequitable, and that she was heartbroken for the beautiful children that, in her eyes, have been told yet again that you're at the bottom of the heap. Stay there. Have you seen or read this open letter, and what are your thoughts on these sentiments?
I have, and I met with the Principals Association last week, and as well as the PBTA and the NCDI about it. I mean, the thing that, you know, that this has kind of highlighted is that even though the government does have this massive program going towards schools, a lot of people's lived experience is that it hasn't reached them yet. And I know that this is something that Chris Hipkins is working on very hard with officials to try and make sure that that money goes from simply being allocated to actually getting to the schools that need it the most. But I do know that a lot of schools, including schools in Taranaki, have not yet had the the funding that they need to be able to do the work that needs to be done. And it absolutely does need to be done. I mean, I've seen, every school that I go to has significant issues to do with their buildings, whether they were underfunded for role growth or whether their buildings are simply so old and dilapidated that they need replacing or even just basic maintenance. Most schools in the country are struggling with this.
In your apology to the Green Party last night, you said that solutions were being sought out and that the public could expect a resolution sometime this week or next week. What do you think needs to be amended? What criteria would a resolution for this tick?
Well, there are a couple of important things to remember here. First of all is that the Crown has entered into this agreement in good faith with the Green School. And so it is important for us to fulfil our commitment there. But we also recognise that, it obviously landed very badly with the public, and in particular with teachers and principals of those schools that haven't yet received the funding that the Crown's allocated towards them. I can't say what the resolution will look like, but we are talking about it.
And so will that be this week that's announced?
I would like to get it resolved as fast as possible.
That same principal said that your next move should be visiting state schools in Taranaki with problems such as mouldy and leaky classrooms. As part of the solutions, do you have plans to do something like this?
Yeah, I do. I actually spoke to them last week on Thursday last week about going up there.
All right.
And I'll see what I can do about getting somebody from the Education Ministry to come along from the Buildings Department, because it is clear that there is still a breakdown there in terms of our ability to make sure that the schools that need that funding actually receive it.
All right. Well, let's move on to conservation projects announced by MP Eugenie Sage. So the Minister of Conservation announced on Saturday that 116 community conservation projects have been granted $5.44 million from the Department of the Conservation's Community Fund. These are community conservation projects, and I was wondering what the difference or benefits of community conservation projects are compared to simply conservation projects, if there is a difference.
Well, there is. I mean, the thing about these community projects is that they are led by, initiated and led by people who are located in the community and who are sort of responding to what they can see in their experience, local issues, and often they'll have better information than, you know, government agencies will. And there's been a long history here of the Department of Conservation working hand in hand with community-led conservation projects on both public land and also on private land. And that of course, is another difference here, is the Department of Conservation has responsibility primarily for public land, and some of these projects do take place on private land. And so the idea here is that we are simply trying to support those projects that are very practical and that help to conserve our Indigenous biodiversity.
What are some examples of the projects that will be funded?
Well, there's the Predator-Free Hauraki Coromandel Community Trust, the Bay Conservation Alliance, which is in the Bay of Plenty, Hawke's Bay Biodiversity Trust, Wild for Taranaki, Banks Peninsula Conservation Trust, and the Whakatipu Wildlife Trust in Queenstown. And so those are kind of local community conservation hubs, and they help to support the volunteer efforts of people in the community to kind of get out and do things like, you know, wild and pine control, predator trapping, native tree planting, and so on.
In the announcement, it said that New Zealand has unique conservation challenges. What are some of these conservation challenges that are unique to Aotearoa?
Well, I mean, essentially, you've got a situation where prior to colonisation, the native flora and fauna had a ecosystem that didn't really include land-based predators. And so it's the introduction of, you know, rats and stoats, possums, cats, deer, goats, and so on, have had a devastating effect on the wildlife, but also on our native bush, because it's evolved over millions of years without having to adapt to, you know, significant numbers of land-based animals. And so it does mean that, you know, we do have significant risks in terms of the number of species of, in particular, bird life, that is at risk, but not only bird life as well.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.